Today's daf in Masechet Yevamot, brought to you from Eretz HaKodesh, is daf Yud Gimel, and we're holding smack bang in the middle of a sugya, really right at the end, of trying to figure out why we would say that a mother-in-law cannot possibly have been mima'enet. So being as we found what seemed to be an indication that a ketana can actually end up having a child, so then why isn't it possible that she was mema'enet after she gave birth to your wife? And on that, the pshat that we had yesterday is that according to Rav Safra, banim are the equivalent of simanim. And therefore, even if she did not reach puberty in terms of signs of puberty, there's no greater proof of puberty than having a child, because that's the essence of puberty, being prepared for reproduction. And then we had the shita that banim are adifei misimanim, which would mean a number of possible things. First of all, according to Rabbi Yehuda, who insists that miyun can go on as long as there hasn't been a bia after a time where d'oraisa, she's considered to be a gedela, then she still is a ketana with her marriage of a ketana, ad sheyarbe hashachor, as the Gemara says. Well, in this case, since she already had a child, so Rabbi Yehuda would be made. That's where we were up to yesterday. Today, on the very, very top, on the beginning of Daf Yud Gimel, Rav Zvid Amar, Ein Banim Belo Simanim. We have a right to assume that there were signs of puberty and that there was, therefore, no way that she could have been Minma Enes, because if she had a child, she probably had reached puberty. And what are we going to be chayshish for that she didn't reach puberty? I mean, what is that, one chance in a million? So we're going to be chayshish for that. We're going to allow miyun from the point of view of a woman that had a child or that had gotten pregnant. Ein banim belo simanim. What do you mean, ein banim belo simanim? I mean, we have to rely on assumptions. Why don't we just check and see whether, in fact, she reached puberty? V'nivdok, so we can check to see if there are signs of puberty there. No, because chashina shema nashru. We're afraid that maybe she actually had produced pubic hair and hair falls out, you know. So because of that, doesn't prove anything. If she had a child, what are we going to do? We're going to see whether she has pubic hairs. And what if she doesn't? Basically, we're going to assume that she had already brought signs of puberty. Wait. That's a big machlokas. There is a Mandi Omar who says that you have to be cheshish shema nashru, and therefore we have to be machmir in cases where we find someone without signs of puberty, who is at the age of puberty. But what about according to the Mandi Omar, cheshish? So if we can check, then let's check. If we're not chayish, if not finding pubic hairs is a raya that she is in fact not of age, so then she could have been b'ma'anes, no? So ma'ikala me'emar. I feel the Madiyama in Cheshin, Mishum Tsar Leda or Tsar Yibor, as Tosis points out, Cheshinan. See, even though normally we would not assume, why should we assume that she had pubic hairs and they fell out? But in this case, if she had a child, so she went through pregnancy or possibly even birth, and then we're going to see whether she has pubic hairs. I mean, you know, the hormonal storm that her body has gone through in order to be able to go through this pregnancy. So we're going to bring a proof from things that are so delicately balanced by hormones. It's ridiculous. So in that case, everybody would be made that it certainly is possible that she had produced pubic hairs, and now all of these changes, which produce so many other changes in the body, so certainly it could have produced a change in which she no longer is able to have these, showing these pubic hairs. Big deal. And now we move on to the next sugya. So the Mishnah now gives us examples. What do we mean when we say potrot sorotehem? Ketzat potrot sorotehem. So the Mishnah says, gives an example, if a bat or any of the tesvav nashim were married to his brother, and this is Richie, we're reminding you of what the tzora is, was married to his brother, and she was married also to another woman at the same time. And in that way, if he dies without any children, the same way that the Erva, maybe his daughter, maybe his mother-in-law, whatever the case is, cannot be taken by him for Yibum, so too is the Tzara, the other woman who's married to his brother, also not able to get Yibum. if there was another brother besides him, and that other brother took the tzara for a Yavama, he could have taken either of them, but he decided he likes this one better. So he takes the tzara as his Yavama, and he had other wives, and then he dies. And now, once again, this original brother who was not faced with the need to be Miyabim the first time, because his own daughter or one of the Tesvav Nashim was part of the family that his brother had left after his death. This time, the second brother has left him with his death with the very woman who he couldn't marry the first time because she was simultaneously married to his first brother, and another woman that is unrelated but was married to his second brother. The same thing occurs again. Since he can't marry the woman that had fallen to him, who was originally the tzara, he cannot marry the woman who's married along with her to the second brother. And this could go on ad infinitum, as many brothers as there are. So if the 98th brother is now married to the 97th co-wife, and this is the wife together with other wives, and she would pater all of his tzarot, all of his co-wives. It's tzara, but tzara, but tzara, but tzara, but tzara, as many brothers as there are. Because, as we explained, the pashtus, the issue is that each one of them becomes the equivalent of an erva, because she is an eishes ach, and an eishes ach is one of those arayas. Now, the question is, how do we know that a tzara paters a tzara? Now, we know that it says the tzara, and that told us that the same way that an erva does not fall to Yibum at all and simply walks away, so too does her tzara. But how do you know that that tzara will pater the next tzara? So Amar Rav Yehuda, the Amar Kra litzror, doesn't say latzur, it says litzror. Litzror means lo tikach litzror legalot ervata aleha. So that means that no matter how many times you can have a tzara, she can also create a tzara. Many tzaras. Rav Ashi says, I don't understand why you need a svara at all. Isn't it svarahi? Tzara maitaima asira. Why did we originally, how do we understand the concept that the Torah was saying that, because it's a very strange situation. It's not that the tzara happened to be married to the same person who was married to the erva, because we know that if it would have been shaloba makom mitzvah, that wouldn't have made the slightest difference to us. So the fact that she happened to be married together with the erva to a man, if it wasn't a brother, to a man, would not have made any difference to us. It's not as if the iser erva sort of slides off and now affects the tzara, also the tzara, just because they're married to the same person. That was what the whole point was of saying before the Shesh Arayot Hamurot Meila. All of the rayas that we had, Lahatir Tzara Shelo B'Mokam Mitzvah, was to make that very clear. There's no concept of catching the status of Erva. You can't catch the status of Erva. You either are related or you're not related. The fact that you happen to marry to someone along with another person who is an Erva to someone doesn't make you an Erva to that person. So that, we've gotten that out of our vocabulary. So if that's the case, then why doesn't it simply follow that since the only time that a tzara becomes asura is where she falls to Yibum along with an erva that cannot be mityabim, it must be because that we consider her herself to now be an erva because of the fact that she is in a position of being an eshet ach, shelo b'moka mitzvah. So why wouldn't that be true of about a tzara also? Isn't she in the same situation, b'moka erva kaima? So apparently, now even though we said before, remember we had a problem whether we ought to read that girsa into the Gemara, whether it said litzor in the Braita, in which case it's very strange. So why are we coming along all of a sudden here and ask, where do we know it from? And have Rav Yehuda tell us when we had it in the Braisa Beferish. It's because of that many are not geres in that Braisa Litzor. And I mentioned to you earlier, we discussed the whole Ripki Veger and what is the point. And we had numerous approaches to that. So one of the approaches was that the Litzor is the source of the fact that there is such a concept b'chlal of being an eishes ach shelo b'makom mitzvah, because otherwise I would not have thought up this din, because eishet ach is not a reason to be putter from yibum, it's a reason to be chayev in yibum. Once I'm told that there's a din of litzrar, then I understand that there is a concept of being actually yourself becoming an erva that is asura because of achot, because of eishet ach. But what the Gemara is asking now is that if the Torah says that the first sara is asura, so it must be because she fell to yibam together with an erva. But then if that's the case, she becomes herself the erva of eishet ach, and therefore when she falls herself together with another woman, then it's the same situation again, except the first time it was his daughter with a tzara, and now it's his brother's wife from his first brother with a tzara. Isn't that the same thing? So therefore, I don't believe that we need an extra pasuk to teach me that that is a way to understand the p'tur, because it seems to me that that is a given, says Rav Ashi. If there is an eshet ach, then that eshet ach is going to always be asura, and therefore, by definition, a tzara is asura. So that we're not 100% sure, however, where Rav Ashi is so positive that that's true. Maybe he's basing it on the other proofs. Remember, we had a number of different approaches, like Rebbe's approach of the Yibma. So maybe it's from these other rayas that a tzara is muteret shelo b'makom mitzvah, and therefore he has a right to conclude that there is a clear indication that the problem is the eshet ach. But still, how would he know that eshet ach is a reason to be poter? Okay, this is already a question of svara, but you can clearly see why it would be a machlokas between Rav Ashi and Rav Yehuda. Okay, the next thing that we had in the Mishnah was explaining, how do we get the case? So ketzad imetu, what was the din? The next thing that the Mishnah started explaining was, why would it be that in any event that the marriage was dissolved before the death of the brother, how could it have been dissolved? Well, she could have died. So if the erva died, then the brothers are no longer married to an erva at the time of the yibum when he dies. Or if he had divorced her, or if she was mima'enet, or if she was found to be an islandist. Those were the cases that the Mishnah listed. So in all of those cases, we say if the bat had died before her husband died, or if she was megureshet and then he died, so then the tzara is certainly muteret to him. Why? Again, because only yibum creates a tzara. Now, what the Mishnah seems to be saying is that even in the event that he was konasul basov giresh, he had been married together with the daughter for 30 years. And a week before he died, he divorced the daughter of his brother. And nonetheless, the Mishnah is saying, as long as that marriage was dissolved, whatever the means were, I don't care how close to the moment of the death of the brother that took place, since at the moment of the brother's death, he was not married to an erva of his brother, so then there's no problem of tzaras erva. Okay, that's clear from the Mishnah, right? So even though he first married, that means he was first married to that tzara, and then he divorced the erva. Not that he divorced the erva before, but if they had ever been married even for a minute together, then it would have been also. That's not what the Mishnah is saying. Okay, problem is, look at the Mishnah that appears later on, and it seems to say not like that. It says that in the case where you had shlosha achim, you've got three brothers, two of those brothers are married to two sisters. And one of the brothers, and again, we'll use our normal terminology, Reuven and Shimon are married to these two sisters, and Levi was married to Stam, to a woman. Now, one of those who was married to the sisters goes ahead, and he was Megaresh, his wife, and then the one who was married to the unrelated person, to the Nochrit, that's Levi, he went ahead and he married her. And then he died. So now that means that in front of the remaining brother, Reuven or Shimon, whoever it was, he now is faced with a case where the original tzara falls to Yibum, to Reuven. Let's say Shimon had died first, or to Shimon, if Reuven had died first. That's what we're talking about. That she'im metu'o nidgarshu tzorotayim utarot. That if any of the Urias had died, then the tzara is mutter. Now, this case is weird, because this case says, if gireish echad mibalei achiyot ishto, if one of the people who had been married to the sister was Megarish's wife, and then the other one, Levi, had died, and this was after Echad Nasui Nochrit, so over here it's saying that in this case, it was Dafka Zuish Amrushi Meto Nitkashu Tzorotayim Mutarot, but that's only because first, it's what it's mashma, first, he had been Megarish, because it says that if the brother who was married to one of the sisters was Megarish's wife, and then the other brother goes ahead and marries the Levi, the third brother's woman, but if it had been the other way around, suppose he had first married, he first did the Yibum to Levi's wife, who had died, and then he divorced his wife, who was the relative of the other brother. Let's take the cases of Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, okay? So we'll call them by their names. So now what happened was, it says over here that if we're going to call the first brother who died Reuven, so if in this case, if that brother had gone ahead, had married Levi's, Levi was the one in this case who had died, and there the means that she wouldn't have been Muteris to Yibum, because at one time or another, this woman had been married to his brother. But that is the opposite of our Mishnah. Why does it have to be that first he was Megarish, and then he went ahead and he took the Yavama from Levi? It doesn't make any sense. Omer of Yirmiyah, what can you do? You're right. The opening Mishnah holds that it doesn't matter if they were married together at some point, even if they were married for 30 years, and then a minute before he dies, the brother is Megarish, it's fine. But this Mishnah is saying only if he had first been Megarish that wife, and then he took Levi's woman, Yibum. The author of Mishnah 1 is not the author of Mishnah 2. What are they arguing about? They're arguing about a question that is fundamental later on in the sukkah. The Tanya of our Mishnah holds that Mita and only Mita is Mapelet, that the Yibum goes into effect. Okay, put it down. The Yibum goes into effect only at the moment of death. So that means that the Zika and the interrelationship between the woman and her brother-in-law is non-existent until the instant that her husband dies without children. Now, that's the way we've been assuming that the halacha is, because we were all based on the first Mishnah. But the other Mishnah holds, Haitanasava, it's the marriage per se that causes the woman to fall to Yibum. In other words, the moment that a marriage takes place, there is a relationship between the wife and her husband and her potential Yavam. Therefore, even if she was a tzoras erva at the same time, it to this brother, if it turns out that there ends up being a yibum, then that woman will always be usher as a tzoras erva. She needed to be divorced before he married the other one. But if he was married to the two of them simultaneously, then that means that the tzarat erva was defined as a tzarat erva before the death of the brother, because nisuim arishonim or mapilin le yibum. So we have to look back at when the Torah defined these interrelationships, and that is a very fundamental machlokas. Whereas Rava says, yes, it's possible, but it's certainly not necessarily the case that the kind of that Mishnah holds that Badavka you had to be Megarish before. Maybe it's the same Tana. And basically, the first Mishnah says the halacha in the extreme, that as long as the brother was Megarish, this woman, before he died at any time, there's not a problem of Tzoras Erva. And then in the next Mishnah, it says, and certainly this is called Zu Ve'in Tzorich Lomar Zu, which sometimes the Tana takes as his approach. I'll tell you the extreme, and then we'll go through, obviously, the case where he had been Megarish, this woman, before he even married the other woman, so that she and the Erva were not even married at the same time at any point to the brother. That case, you'll say, but I mean, is that obvious? Yes, it's obvious. I just want to talk it out so you can understand the difference and to make it clear that the first case is really extreme and that it doesn't matter if they were married together for many years, she's not a tzara. So I think maybe that's the way to learn it. Zo, the Inserich Lomar Zo. Now, he's not claiming that there's no machlokas. He's just saying that the Tana of the Mishnah later does not necessarily have to subscribe to that shita. Okay, is this clear to everyone, the machlokas here? I'm not getting much input here from anyone. I'm still seeing eyes going around and around in circle. You know, what I think I'm going to start doing is bringing quarters to the Daf Yomi. Because when those eyes start going around, I can stick a quarter in one of them. And maybe at the end, I can end up with, wow, the slot machine just pours out quarters from your mouths and I get rich. That would be amazing here. Great way to make money off of Daf Yomi. Do you think maybe you could stop looking like slot machines and maybe give me some human feedback around here? Is there any problem with this sugya? Have I not succeeded in explaining things clearly? Please tell me if anyone has a problem. No one knows how to talk. All right, I'm going to take the easy way out and assume that the reason that the slot machine is going is because I've spoken too much and tried too hard to explain it, so I'll explain things less. So let's go on to the next case. V'chol she'yechola l'mayim, the Mishnah, at the end of the Mishnah, it said, even if she was able to be b'mayim, but she wasn't, which means what? That the Erva over here was a ketana, and she had not been married by her father to this person. So the very fact that she could have given miyun means that in reality, midiraisa, the tzora is chayevet in yibum, because this girl who is his daughter or his mother or whatever the case is not really married midiraisa. So how can she pater the tzora? She can't. However, since the rabbanan created a kiddushin, so it's as if she's married, therefore the tzora cannot get yibum midrabanan, but of course she will still need chalitza. But wait, can't she do the miyun now? Because remember, how does miyun work? Miyun actually cancels the marriage. It annuls the original marriage, remember? And of course, we know the answer to this. We've had this discussion yesterday because we had to explain this whole concept of etzaras mima'enes. So we're really cognizant of the issues that are taken into consideration here. But the Gemara is going to go through it in this sugi again. So why can't she simply go ahead now, do miyun, and that would allow the tzara to have yibam instead of chalitza, right? Because remember, how does miyun work? It works by annulling the original marriage to the brother, in which case there never was a tzara's erva because the erva was never married. It now turns out retroactively. Unless you're ready to say that since the Mishnah does not take that as a possibility, so that is a raya to Rabbi Oshaya. Because Rabbi Oshaya says that in a case where Ketana was married only midrabbanan, meaning not that her father had given her, but her mother had given her, the father was dead, or she was a Yisome B'chayavia, whatever the case is, she is able to be mima'enet only to the ma'amar. Now, remember yesterday we had the concept of ma'amar? So if one of the brothers goes ahead and gives kiddushin to his yavama, and the rabbanan made it a mitzvah to do that before consummating the marriage with the yavama, because it's much more like a real marriage, and she should be treated with dignity, and therefore we have this concept of ma'amar. So suppose that brother would die. So in that case, we had the problem yesterday of the ma'amar falling from two mesim. And then there's other issues, because in the event that he does not want, he changes his mind and he does not want to take her, Can he just give her chalitza? No, because he already said arayat mekudeshetli. So he has to give her a get. Can he just give her a get? No, because she's also a yevama. Because b'diraisa, the mamar didn't do a darn thing. So that would be a case where he would have to give both chalitza and gittin, right? In order for it to be mater her completely. So now suppose, however, she was a ketana, and she's mima'enet to the brother who gave the ma'amar. That she can do. She can cancel the ma'amar because she's a ketana, and then she will not require a get. But she can still not, once her husband died and she hadn't been mima'enet her in his lifetime, she cannot now be mima'enet to annul the original marriage and to therefore allow the tzara to actually not be considered a tzara's erva. That she cannot do. And she cannot do that for herself. She can't be mima'enet in his zika so that she shouldn't need the chalitza. All that she can do is she shouldn't need the get by going ahead and being mima'enet, but she still will need the chalitza. So this seems to be a riot to that, because our mission is saying you cannot go ahead and after the death of a husband be mima'enet to cancel the marriage. Exactly the same thing. That's what Rav Hoshaya was saying. No, it's not the same thing, says the Gemara. Because in a case where we're dealing with a tzaras erva, that is different. Like we saw yesterday, there the Rabbanan made a gezera that even if the erva is bima'ena subsequently and that annuls her marriage retroactively, we still said that b'sha'at nefila, when she fell, she looked like she was really married, because if she weren't, why is she talking to this Yavam at all? Why is she dealing with Mion with him? Why did she go to Besdin to discuss it? I thought she wasn't even married because she just walked out. And so since at that point, people see her as being married in order to avoid misunderstandings of the relationship of a Tzara to an Erava, we assert her to do an ex post facto Mion. But that's the only reason, whereas Rav Hoshaya was saying that even when it comes to not a case of an erva, where we just had a woman who was married and she was a ketana, Rav Hoshaya is saying she cannot cancel her original marriage if her husband had died. Maybe our mission doesn't go that far. Maybe it only makes this gezera in the context of specifically a case where she was married with as an erva. And why? What would be the reason for that? As we saw yesterday, the reason would be the Tani Rami Bar Yecheskel, Miana Beva'al Muteret Le'aviv. So if she had been married, remember we had this yesterday, if she had been married to a man and she was Mima Enet, so then she's allowed to marry that man's father, because everybody knows that a ketana is mima enet, annulled the marriage. So she was never his daughter-in-law. And if she was never his daughter-in-law, she's a stranger to him. So why can't he marry her? He can. But if first the husband, who was this father-in-law's son, died, and then she was mima enet to the yavam, he can never marry her. Asur la aviv. Why? Because it doesn't look good. Because Alma Misha'at Nefila Nireit Kikalato. From the moment that she needed to deal with the Yibum, people are saying, aha, so she really was his daughter-in-law. So therefore, because of that, she can't get married. So that could be the case over here also. Ochanami, as we said yesterday, Misha'at Nefila Nireit Kitzarat Pito. And since she needed to deal with Yibum, it looked like she was really married. And therefore, Minerabonon, we asur it, but that does not necessarily mean that we would say it's asura and that a ketana cannot annul a marriage if there's no problem of erva involved. Why not? So therefore, we cannot bring a raya from here, but we can certainly move on. At last, we've dealt with every single clause of our Mishnah, and we finally get to the second part of the Mishnah, which we already had learned before, but we'll go through it again. In honor of Gavi's haircut, if you want to honor a haircut like that, I certainly will not. But all right, but in honor, we're up to the Mishnah, and therefore Richie will proceed. Next time Richie may offer to give you a haircut, I think it will come out a lot better, or I can recommend a few people. Go for it, Rich.
Je t'élec Mishnah.
So, as we know, there are six other arayot that, in a sense, are more chomer than the first 15. In what sense are they more chomer? They're more chomer that they could never marry any of the brothers, and therefore they could never fall to Yibam, because basically the only way that they could fall to Yibam again would be if one of the brothers was mutter, right? So then you could have a tzara. But if they couldn't marry any of the brothers, so then, of course, the tzara is mutter, because there's nobody at all in the family that can do yibam. And therefore, since a tzara is only asura b'mokam yibam, therefore, they will not have a din of a tzara. And that's basically what the Mishnah is coming to assert. Bad haircuts are not reasons to hide behind vaccines. And so they are chamurad mielu, since they are nisuot la'acherim. Therefore, the tzoros are dafka mutter, because they're not going to be married to any brother, and they're not going to fall to any of the brothers. And therefore, the whole idea of the concept of the tzora is only where you fall to yibum. Over here, they can't fall to Yibam. So there's nothing to discuss. And since over here, there would be no way where she could marry one of the brothers, so we don't get into this whole issue of the tzara being asura the next time around. There is no next time around, because there is no Yibam. So since they're nesuot acherim, their tzarot are always going to be mutter, because they're going to only be married to somebody else. And they cannot, obviously, it's not really a chumrah. We're calling it a chumrah only in terms of, you know, they're so bad they couldn't be married to any of your brothers. But I mean, they're not really murchomer. So who does that include? So your mother, because she is going to be related to your father. And this apparently would be going according to the Man D'Yoma, that a father's rape victim is also considered to be asura. Okay, so then this is gufa, as we said. We're going aliba that shita. So therefore, we don't mention Imo. This was the whole discussion with Rebbe and Levi, right? Eshet aviv, obviously a father's wife, a father's sister, is an auntie to any of your brothers. A father's brother's sister, which is also an aunt that's usher to any of the brothers. And eshet achiv me aviv, any of the cases where a brother had died and had died with children, and therefore there was no issue, or had didn't die. Maybe he just had been married to this woman and divorced her. But if he was ever married to her, then of course she is not going to be able to marry any of the brothers, and therefore will never be able to fall to Yibam, because none of the brothers could have been married to her, just like he can't be married to her. And so say so, maybe she's usher anyway, because she's married at the same time. No, there's no din of being married to some stranger, and therefore she won't fall to Yibam. So since none of your brothers could be married to this woman, how could she fall to Yibam, and how could she create a tzara? A tzara is only where she falls to Yibam. Beit Shammai matirin hatzarot lachim. Now, there's a basic machlokas about whether there even is a concept of a tzara. According to Beit Shammai, there's not even this issue of a tzara, which sort of changes the whole masechet. And you must admit that for the first time, you really appreciate Beit Shammai here, because we could have crossed out these first tapim, not have to go through all this hell, and then Richie wouldn't be looking like the slot machine today, right? But I'll remember that Beit Shammai b'makom Beit Hillel ain't a Mishnah, so we're going to have to grin and bear it. Okay, so even though Beit Shammai or Matir Natzorot Lachim, Beit Hillel is Osrim. And therefore, the difference between the opening Mishnah is that it's going like Beit Hillel, and he's talking about women that could theoretically be married to a brother. And this Mishnah is talking about women who are so Osir, they couldn't be married to any of the members of the family. And therefore, if she's your mother, she ain't going to be married to any of your brothers. Okay, continues the Mishnah now. There's some very important implications of this machlokas, because listen, if she went ahead, this Sora goes ahead and gets chalitza, according to Beit Shammai, great, she was supposed to get chalitza. And if she gets chalitza, then since a chalutza is asura to the kuhuna, so therefore she's similar to a grusha. Remember that the din of chalutza, even though we always mention grusha v'chalutza l'kohen et yod, really, right? But the chalutza is only a derabbana. The grusha is the diuraita. Fine, but lamaisa, according to Beit Shammai, she would be posel min kuhuna. Well, obviously, she is a real chalutza. Whereas Beit Hillel says, chalutza? Chalutza to who? To a tsoras erva? That's not called chalutza. That's called spitting at someone. What does that have to do with chalitza? Why would she be psula to a kohen? Because she spit at a man. Boy, that's a new idea. So therefore, says Beit Hillel, why is she posel? She'd go right in and marry the kohen. Nityabmu. And if they went ahead and were meyabim the tzara, so Beit Hillel says, oh, well, that's very good. She's supposed to. I mean, now, if the yavam dies, so then she could still marry a kohen because she didn't turn into a zayna, did she? Whereas, according to Beit Hillel, she turned into a zayna because now she's considered to have married someone that was a chiyuv kares, and that passes her. And not only that, but any of her children would be mamzerim. So even though we have this machlokas, which is very dramatic, and elu poslin and elu machshirin, because of this machlokas, some people are going to be considered to be psulim, and some are considered to be ksherim, according to the others. So the woman who's a tzara of an erva and got yibum, according to Beit Hillel, she is asura, and according to Beit Shammai, she's muteras. And according to Beis Shammai, she would, if she did chalitza, she's psula, and according to Beis Hillel, she was considered to be okay. But the worst thing is that she would have had a mamzer, according to Beis Hillel, from someone that, according to Beis Shammai, was a mitzvah. Whoa, that's very serious. So, doesn't matter. In reality, lo nimne'u Beit Shammai mili sanashi mi Beit Hillel, v'lo Beit Hillel mi Beit Shammai. They did not create any kind of social distinctions between them to say, well, you're not allowed to marry. How can you marry a woman in Beit Shammai's home? After all, they made mamzerim and claimed they were mitzvahs. No, they were not in any way misrachic from each other. Gemara is going to ask, but why? I mean, seriously speaking, it's all very nice to be tolerant, but you can't marry mamzerim just because you're tolerant. Gemara is going to talk about this. And even though there's so many machlokas that in Tumah v'Tahira, one side says it's Tomei and one side says it's Tor, v'kola ta'arot v'tumot sho'yu elu mitarim v'elu mitamim, even so, lo nimnu osim ta'arot elu agabe elu, they did not in any way make such rules. Don't borrow any kalim from Beis Hillel. These guys are makel on tyrants and so on. Can you imagine eating that heksher? It's outrageous. Don't marry into that family. And apparently they even allowed you to marry a child who had gone to a nursery that was certified by Beit Hillel, even if you're a Beit Shammai and it did not pass you from a shidduch, which is incredible. So now let's go to the machlokas. Okay, so Beit Shammai don't agree to such a thing as litzror. So what do they do with litzror? Well, first of all, Beit Shammai holds that the pasuk says that there is no such thing. It's not just that they don't darshan, because says Beit Shammai, look at the pasuk. Lo tiyeh eshet hamet hachutza le'ish zar. The wife of the deceased brother, the one who is hachutza, she cannot go ahead and marry somebody else. What do you mean, the one who is hachutza? Meaning, there is an eshet hamet that is a krova. What's the opposite of a krova? Krov, chutz, right? She's totally out of the family. This one is close to the family. Fine. So what it's saying is, the one who is from a different family, meaning she's not related, she cannot marry somebody who is from somewhere else until she gets yibam. But that implies that there is not a chutzah, there is a krova who is pnimit. She's in the family. And that would mean that even though we're dealing with this situation, there's a chutzah and there's a pnimit, that the only problem is on the one who is chutzah. But the one who is pnimit is not a problem because after he's an erva. So then she is a tzoras erva, and it says lo tiyah, she can't marry somebody else because yevama yevolel. That's what it says. So we see from here that even though she's married together with a woman who is a pnimit, meaning she's an erva, she is a chutzah, meaning she's a tzoras erva, and she is chayevet in yibum. Yevamo yevolel. Fereshah pasuk says Bet Shammai. So what are we talking about over here, asering a tzoras erva? So what exactly do we do with this? I mean, l'chora, it says this beferish. What does Beit Hillel do with this pasuk? Beit Hillel says this pasuk is an extremely important pasuk, and it does not mean achutza, it doesn't mean another person. It's coming to tell me that miboylet l'kravyudam arav, the amr of yudam arav, how do we know that if a Yevama goes ahead and accepts Kiddushin from another individual before the Yevam gets a chance to give her Chalitza, or before he does Yibam, how do we know that that marriage is null and void and there's no Kiddushin? Because normally, what's the din if someone is Mekadosh and Isha, who is an Isser Lav, but not an Isser Karetz? The Kiddushin is Chal. He's not allowed to consummate the marriage, but he has to divorce her. How do we know that in this case, even though there's only a lotas of lotia ishta meta chutza, how do we know that there's not even any kedushin, an ain kedushin chal on an yevama? Because tamad lomar lotihiye ishta meta chutza tihiye is lashon havaya. Havaya is a lashon of kedushin. Lotihiye ba havaya lezar. There is no creation of the existential state of marriage at all to someone who is not her yavam. That's what I need it for. Beit Shammai says, no, no, now wait a minute. If it would have said in the pasuk, lo tiye lachut, you'd be right. But it's calling a chutza. Chutza is a adjective with a feminine adjective, clearly referring to chutza, the woman who is defined as Miss Chutza, that is to say, she is unrelated to the Yavam. She's the Chutza one. That's what it says. It doesn't say she shouldn't go La Chutz. Beis Hillel says, I got news for you. Wherever it puts a hey at the end of the word, it's the same thing as saying go La Chutz. So Chutza means La Chutz. That's what it means. Keman dechtiv Chutza, keman dechtiv La Chutz. I mean, don't you know everybody who's learned Rashi knows this? Beit Shammai, you don't know this? Rashi repeats it a million times, right? Koma kom shetzorich lamed b'tchilata, kazer v'atera, hey b'sofa, fine. So the Tanya, kol teva tzitzicha lamed b'tchilata, says Rabbi Nechemya. The Torah uses a hey at the end of the word to be the same as the lamed. And Tanya Devei Rabbi Shmuel gave lots of examples. Kigon, elim, it says elima. Machanaim, is a psukim. It says Machanaima. Mitzrayim, instead it says Mitzrayima. Divlataima. Yerushalayima. For heaven's sakes, Midbara. There's so many cases. These are not referring to Miss Midbar. It's referring to the Midbar. And Chutza is not referring to Miss Chutza. It's referring to Lachutz. And therefore, Beit Shammai, it's obviously coming to tell me the din that Kiddushin is in Taifas, and it has nothing to do with being an adjective of a woman. I don't know what you're thinking. And Beit Shammai says, I mean, first of all, what does Beit Shammai say about this machlokas of Rabbi Yudam Arav? How does he know that Kiddushin is not Taifas on this Shomeret Yavam? Well, he says that can be learned from the concept of Le'ish Zar in the same pasuk. Lo tiye eshet amet le'ish zar. That I understand without the word chutzah. So chutzah, what would chutzah mean? Doesn't le'ish zar mean la chutz, for God's sake? So then obviously this chutzah with the hay at the end can't be repeating the same thing. It can't be saying la chutz, la'ish zar, and repeat the same concept twice in a row. So therefore, I say the way to understand it is Miss Chutzah should not be going to an Ish Zar. And therefore, it means there's no existential state of Kiddushin for Miss Chutzah. But That is coming to tell me that there is a Miss Pnimit, even together with Miss Chutza, who is the Krova, and Miss Chutza is a Tsaras Erva, and nonetheless she gets Yibum, haha, meanwhile telling us that in this state of Shomeret Yavam, she cannot get Kiddushin from someone else because it ain't going to happen. That's all. The Torah cancels that act of Kiddushin. So what do I need to repeat it for? Ubeit Hillel, isn't that true? That's a very good point. What would be the point of saying, Lachutz la Izar? So learn it from Izar. Well, reluctantly, we have to admit that, yes, it is actually true. And Beit Shammai comes out on top again. Ding, now. Now's the time to let out all those quarters. Yep, ding, quarters. Nothing. Okay. So damn, those slot machines just keep running and running and running. They're supposed to stop at one point. Okay, so actually, ein hachinami. It's really true. And the real approach, according to Beit Hillel, of why does it say chutza, that's coming to tell me that even Miss Chutza, okay, but who is Miss Chutza according to you if there's not a pnimit and a chutza? No. Miss Chutza means she's not really a very close kind of wife. She's a chutza kind of wife, meaning that you never consummated the marriage. You just gave her a ring, and she's an arusa, but she's not a nisua. Now, would you know that? Do you know that there's a din of yibum, even where you never got to the chuppah with this woman? No. So I need to know that from the word chutza. Miss chutza, little... We don't want to use the word fiancé because Kiddushin is really more than fiancé, but basically that idea that we would say the poor widowed fiancé, I mean, she's not widowed, she just never got married. So that's what it's coming. And Beit Shammai, where would they know that then? Isn't that a more likely explanation of little Miss Chutza rather than to say there must be a Miss Pnimis and she's only the Miss Chutza? They say, yes, it would be. But remember, it says ha-chutza, and that doubles your winnings. Ding, doubles your winnings. Get it? And therefore, you can have both limudim from here. That first of all, she's little Miss Chutza, the fiancé. And secondly, she is also Miss Chutza vis-a-vis Miss Pnimis. And therefore, she's a tzaras erva. You get that from the double ha-chutza. Whereas Beis Hillel says, it don't talk to me. Chutza and ha-chutza, I don't see that as being two separate drushes. Now, Rava says, I have a brilliant explanation without all of this discussion. My brilliant explanation is ein isur chal al isur. What does that mean? Well, what it's going to turn out to mean, let's learn what it's going to turn out to mean first, because that's going to make a major breakthrough in the entire understanding of the concepts of Yibam. It's because Ein Isur Chal Al Isur, which means that since in the event that there is an Eshet Ach, that Isur of Eshet Ach would have to take place over and above the fact that this is your daughter. He went and married your daughter. Now, your daughter was already Usur to you, right? And so were all of these Ervas. They were already usur to you. So if they were already usur to you, when your brother goes ahead and marries them, how in the world is the Isur Eshes Ach going to be chal on the Isur of a bat? It won't be, because Ein Isur Chal Al Isur. But if there's no Isur of Eshet Ach, and this is what we talked about last night, there is no mitzvah of Yibam. It's not. I mean, she's married to my brother. Yeah, but she's not an erva. Yibam is only when she's an erva because of your brother. What, you got to have a dafka be an erva? Yep. The din of Yibam is linked to the fact that this woman is your eshet ach defined by Arias. Because Yibam, remember, is a genetic phenomena. And if the genetic phenomena is not in effect, because there's no iser of the genes of her relationship to your brother at all, because ain iser chalal iser, then the halacha is not able to discuss a genetic phenomenon. You understand the sophistication of this argument of Rava and the further insight into the way in which Yibam is related to Erva. Now, that is such a major new concept that the Gemara misunderstands what Rava is trying to say. And the Gemara thinks that what it means is that the new Isser Erva is not going to be Chal on Eshet Ach. What do you mean? Well, we're talking about an Isser Erva that's not really genetic. It's your wife's sister. And that was the only Erva, remember, that turned out to be more of a convenience issue, in the sense that Litzror tells me there that the idea is that a woman should not have to put up with her sister in the same home. But if that woman dies, then it's okay to marry her sister. So obviously, it's not a genetic issue, right? Because otherwise, why would it change? None of the other arayas change. So if that's the case, the Gemara thought it was referring specifically to that case. So that means that you went ahead and married a woman that would have now become your wife when she has a sister, so that you created the Isser of Achot Ishto after your brother had married his wife, and therefore she would not become Achot Ishto, because that's a new Isser. But then it would depend who got married first, wouldn't it, Rava? So the way we misunderstood Rava, the Gemara immediately asks, but doesn't it depend who got married first? Wouldn't we say, Tenach Eched and Asa mate, if the brother who died was the one who married his wife first, and then the brother who is now the Yavam went ahead and married his wife, then the Isser of his wife's sister would not have been Chal on the already existing Isser of the Achot, of the Eshet Ach. So there are law at the Isser Achot Ishav, Chayel Yisr Ach. But what about the other way around? What about if the Yavam had married, and then the brother who died had married? So then the first Isser would be Achot Isha. Achot Isha would come first. And how would that allow you to actually marry the Tzara, even Ali ben Beit Shammai? No, you don't understand. That's not what Rava meant. Rava meant that in the case where Isser Eshes Ach cannot come along to be Chal on the Isser Achot Isha, so then it would be a tzaras erva shelo b'makom mitzvah. That's the problem. So why is it shelo b'makom mitzvah? Because there's no iser eshet ach. So if there's no iser eshet ach, sharia. So because of that, she would be muteret. And because of that, since there's no iser, there is no yibum. And the fact that she happens to be married to him is basically irrelevant. And therefore, Rava is explaining it doesn't matter whether the arayas are talking about the arayas that are genetically related, or the arayas like the Achot Ishto are not genetically related. It's all going to be the same. So therefore, according to Rava, you need to have a halacha of an Isser Eshet Ach, and therefore Beit Shammai is saying, since Ein Isser Chal Al Isser, either there's not going to be the Isser Eshet Ach, and even in the case of the Achot Isha, there either will not be the Eshet Ach that came first, if the Achot Isha came first, or there won't be the Isser of Achot Isha if that came second. So whichever way, you're still never going to have any of the cases, even the ones that are dependent on an act of your part, where you had to marry the woman to create the Erva. In all cases, it'll be mut. Wow. So this is a brand new idea, which is quite amazing. So now, why do we need to know that Choltzu Beit Shammai are poslim? Obviously, Beit Shammai, that's just the same thing you're saying again. You told me that Chalitza is not necessary according to Beit Hillel and is necessary according to Beit Shammai. So obviously, it's Chalitza according to Beit Shammai and not Alibi to Beit Hillel. Isn't that obvious, Pshita? No, because we're going to see later on that Rabbi Yochanan had come up with a brilliant idea. And Rabbi Yochanan says, listen, gentlemen, we cannot have a situation where according to one shita, you're supposed to be miyabim a woman and create a mamzer, and according to another shita, you're not even allowed to be involved with this, is not even chalitz. It's absurd. So what we need to do is create a halacha that there is a chiyuv to give chalitza to a tzaras erva, and you're not allowed to be miyabim. Let's all agree on that, and then everything will be fine. In which case, if you give chalitza like you have to, it will be usher to a kohen, even according to Beis Hillel. And of course, you'll never end up giving yibum because it's usher to give yibum because of our new gezeira. And that way there won't be any mamzerim in the Beit Shammai approach. Isn't that much better? So if that were true, then according to Beit Hillel, if you gave chalitza, the chalitza would actually pass over the kuhuna. Therefore comes along the Mishnah to say that Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri's brilliant idea was not accepted. And that according to Beit Shammai, and only Beit Shammai, the chalitza passes for the kuhuna. And according to Beit Hillel, it does not. Now the question is, what about Purim? I mean, we couldn't have gotten to this daf Matzai Purim and it not be Nogea Purim. So, says the Gemara, if the Mishnah says, Nityabmu, Beit Hillel are passeling, which is obvious, well, of course Beit Hillel are passels, why do we need to repeat that? I did the Tanachotsu, Tananami Nityabmu. But wait, says the Gemara, this ends up with being two completely different approaches, one according to Beit Shammai, one according to Beit Hillel, and now you say we rejected Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, who said we can't have a situation like this. How do you explain Purim? Purim is outrageous. We've got people keeping Purim on the 14th, we've got people keeping Purim on the 15th, and then if they're B'nai Kfarim, they could actually go in if they want to, they can go in and be Maktim, Liyom HaKnisa, that's a Maklokis, they have to, can they? All of this is not creating two separate terrorists in Klal Yisrael? Oh, you 14ers. Wouldn't even talk to you. So why is this not the same? And this is how it all started. Tanat, Megillah Nikret, just in case you were feeling like you were missing Purim already. So Megillah Nikret, Pachadasar, B'Shneimasar, B'Shloshasar, B'Arbasar, B'Chamishasar, Lo Pachot V'Lo Yoter. Ah, it feels like we're back home again. Let me tell you, we can take the schnapps out and start thinking again.
Why isn't Rebbe drinking?
Yeah. So, thank you. All right, so why is this not, says Reish Lakish to Rabbi Yochanan, why is this not lo titko to do, which we darshan, lo tasu agudot agudot. You cannot have different ways of keeping Torah. How in the world do we have some people keeping 14th as Purim and some people the 12th as Purim when the rest of the city is keeping the 14th? This is crazy. How is that possible? Well, says Rabbi Yochanan, don't we need lo titgodedu to tell me the Iker Din of lo titgodedu? Lo titgodedu means that a person is not allowed to make a chabura on the death of a relative. Lo titgodedu. Lo tasu chabura al mit. Interesting, because the word chabura also means gedida, right? So both words have the same double meaning. Don't make chaburot, chaburot. Don't make chaburot, meaning don't make sores. Don't make gedudot. But a gedud is also a chabura. But a gedud is also lo titgodedu to make a sword, a challenge. Bring me another word that means those exactly two meanings. Who can give me another word with those exact two meanings? Chevel, chevel nevi'im, chabalah. A group of people is a chevel. But a sor is a chabalah, making a wound. Any other thoughts on the matter? How about the Moshe Foreman, who loves word plays like this? And how about
staff and club makes the wound?
Did I hear a barnea?
No, you heard an Ira. The staff and the club make the wounds.
My friend. Excellent. So he is there. And he's not a slot machine. So why not give us the full joy of his presence? I don't know. It must be he's having too much fun on the tractor while we're sitting here and learning. But okay.
Matei, Rebbe, Matei. There he is.
Show us the field, for heaven's sakes.
Okay. Daniel, that's what Ira was saying.
I guess you don't want to show. I guess you don't want to show us the horse, right? Beautiful. Okay. Anyway, so what do you say about that? So therefore, says Rabbi Yochanan.
Maybe the local says
Rabbi Yochanan. Says Rabbi Yochanan. Let's leave it at that for today, so that you will have some time to discuss the loss of Reb Chaim Kanievsky, which is today's Levaya, which I strongly recommend not going to. For I believe it's Mamish Sakonis Nefashis to go to that Levaya. But in any event, I just want to point out to everybody that while people go around leading normal lives, which they think are normal for Jews, there are, believe it or not, in exactly the same way that the Gemara, at the Zaman of the Gemara, you'd have walked in and you would have recognized that there are Talmidei Chachamim that do nothing yoimam v'layla but sit and learn Torah. And that in their behavior, they're mekayim every single mitzvah. And that they actually fit the description of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is looking for in terms of tzidkes. This is what it means to be a Jew. So that it's possible for a person to be sitting an entire life and to be learning every single year the entire Shas Yerushalmi and the entire Shas Bavli and the entire Shulchan Aruch and to write every single month another Sefer on it and to put out an Pirush on the entire Yerushalmi and to give out all series of Sfarim on the Mishnah Brura and to Paskin Dinim that have to do with astronomy. Some of the most important Sfarim on the Dinim of Kiddush HaChodesh come from him, and to Paskin Dinim that have to do with art, with agriculture. Some of the most important Sfarim on the Dinim of Shemitah come from him, and to be able to simply go around and to be available to every person who walks in nonetheless, and to do chesed. What is a Jew supposed to look like? This is what a Ben Yisrael looks like, except that we forget that this is what a Ben Yisrael looks like. So that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks to a door, that he can still speak to a door that has a Jew, that's amazing. But we're talking about exactly the way Moshe Rabbeinu would have spoken to Bnei Yisrael. This is Ma Hashem Elokecha Shoel Mimach. Yeah, the young person says, absolutely, sure. Ma Hashem Elokecha Shoel Mimach. This is the same thing, the Avas Chesed, the Limud HaTorah. And there's still someone to speak to. Who would believe that? Nobody believes that. They think, no, okay, you know, we do our best and so on. Who would believe there's somebody that's exactly the same as it was at that moment, at Kabbalah Zatera? This is what I'm asking you. Of course, that's an incredible thing. And such a thing means that a door is still a door of Bnei Yisrael. So then you have to ask yourself, okay, what happens if you don't know anybody else who's doing that? What happens to the door? Who is HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaking to? To half-heartedness? To the people that Yirmiyahu HaNavi was speaking to, Hashem Yirachem, in this last week's Haftarah? The people who have forgotten Emunah? You don't need to say more than that. Okay. See you all, Bezrat Hashem, tomorrow.